On the under $3 menu at McDonald's, the sausage burrito is $2. So dip, drizzle, or douse to your heart's desire. Because no matter how you sauce your sausage burrito, it's still just $2 with McValue.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to The Early Line. We are live right here on Sports Grid on a Wednesday morning. I am Kevin Walsh, joined, of course, by Donnie Wrightside. Donnie, how are we feeling?
Very good. It was a fun and profitable night last night on the Major League Baseball card. Some would say home runs are a good thing on Dinger Tuesday with the FanDuel Sportsbook. And oh my, was it for both of us last night, Kevin?
It certainly was. I was just going to, Dinger Tuesday, like, you just want to make the whole headlines about it. We were able to sneak it in, though, to our first 7-in-7 headlines here because the Seager brothers both went deep. Relevance in a couple of ways here. Corey hits one for the Dodgers in that big-time series against the Phillies. A massive rain delay knocks out both of their starters, but I'd be doing a disservice. I didn't bring up Kyle Seager going yard, which moves Donnie now to 6-4-6, 100% on Dinger Tuesday.
It's amazing stuff here, Kevin, because the joke of it was we're not even going to get to cheer it on. At least I wasn't going to get to cheer it on last night on In Play Sports Tonight. And I said, I'm going to go to sleep, and I know deep into the night Seager's going to go yard. Wake up at about 4:50 a.m. to see he did go yard. And the best part about that is, you say, Donnie, oh, no, I took the wrong Seager brother there for the Dodgers. It doesn't matter. Whatever Seager you had last night, you cashed in on that ticket. So big night here on Dinger Tuesday. Kevin, you cashed in with Jose Abreu. Wonderful stuff here. Pays off once again.
I really hope somebody out there, bet the wrong Seager and still came away winning money. That'd be a tremendous story. Sticking with Major League Baseball, the Rays beat the Red Sox again. This is the fourth straight time that they have beat this team, expanding their division lead, Donnie, to now 6 in the loss column.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about this one, Kevin, as you take a look? Because, a loss is still a loss, but there's some excruciating ways to lose. You keep jumping out to leads of 3 runs plus and losing them, particularly this one in your own ball yard against the Tampa Bay Rays, a team you have to beat, and now you're sliding in the standings. It's not as if they're coming out, Kevin, oh, we're down 7-1 after 2 innings. There's no shot in this game. You're taking leads. You got to hold on to these games here. We'll see if Boston can end the losing streak, but last night, that's a tough blow. You needed that win against the Rays.
Certainly did. They've got 2 more games here against Tampa Bay to kind of correct course, and boy, do they need it. Switching over to the NBA, a couple of big headlines there. We'll start it in Boston as the Celtics, finally somebody acquires Dennis Schroeder as a free agent. Boy, turning that contract down from the Lakers did not work out for Dennis, but he'll be on his way to their rival in Boston.
It's a nice move for Boston. You get him for $5.9 million when Dennis Schroeder had, visions of grandeur of a $100 million contract in the NBA, and I believe turning down close to $20 million on a contract with the Lakers that would have spanned at least 4 years. So, hey, sometimes when you bet on yourself, Kevin, you end up crapping out, and that looks like that what happened to Schroeder. But again, still young in his career, plays well for Boston. He'll still be lined up for a nice contract extension throughout the league. But when you're thinking about signing a big deal with the Lakers and turning it down, saying I'm worth much more than that, it's got to be humbling, Kevin, to go after a contract on a one-year deal at around $6 million.
And just in case people go, man, where did it go wrong for Dennis Schroeder? Game 5 against the Phoenix Suns, 0-for-9 from the floor, 0 points in 26 minutes of work. Don't look any further. It's not that hard. But to be fair, before he started battling with COVID, he was better than that. It could be a nice value pickup for the Celtics. We'll bring the radio audience into the fold here. Thanks to all those that are listening to The Early Line on Sports Grid Radio. All of our radio affiliates out there, Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside with you on a Wednesday morning, sticking with the NBA. And Donnie, some rumors circulating around Ben Simmons and the Golden State Warriors. Ben possibly with an eye towards California. The Warriors, though, apparently, Donnie, hesitant here in terms of a fit between Ben Simmons and Draymond Green.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fit, obviously, with them two playing together, I don't know how much sense it makes, because two guys that we wouldn't say would be elite from downtown shooting, and that's really what the NBA is at this time. But also, you see Draymond Green a lot of the times running the offense up at the top of the key, shooting three-point shots, setting pick and rolls. The problem with Simmons in Philadelphia is he can't coexist with Joel Embiid, because people need to occupy the block. Joel Embiid needs that space, and you're not kicking it out to Ben Simmons for a three-point shot. I mean, Ben Simmons can fit anywhere, plays fantastic defense, and maybe he does fit with the Warriors, but I don't know. If you're looking for lockdown defense with him and Draymond Green on the court at the same time, that's great. But then when you get to the offensive side, I don't really know how well that works out. But again, you're talking about a good basketball player. He'll fit in with any team. Just how well he fits with certain players on the floor, that's to be determined.
We'll talk more about the fit. I have some optimism. We'll break that down here in hour number one. How about yesterday? Pick one and pick two, Cade Cunningham versus Jalen Green in the summer league there. Jalen Green drops 25 in a Rockets 20-point victory.
Yeah, how about that? 111-91, high-scoring tilt there. Cade Cunningham, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. I would say, Kevin, with this draft class coming into the NBA, we always like to look ahead. I think the NBA is in pretty good hands over the next 5 to 10 years with these young superstars showing out in the summer league.
No doubt about it. Also, Jalen Green's plus 300 to win Rookie of the Year is more appetizing than I ever thought it was going to be. How about an injury update on Carson Wentz? Donnie talked about this a lot. Hey, listen, guys, like, read the tea leaves here. I think this might be okay. He's walking around to practice, Donnie. No problem. No surgery. Wentz just moving out there at camp.
Yeah, we saw the 5 to 12 week timeline, Kevin, looking closer to 5 weeks at this point and back at camp. You know, obviously they're going to ease him back in, but I got to tell you know, athletes want to get back on the field. So if we're looking somewhere around that September 10th range here, we got a month to go. I think he's going to be back by week one, and that will impact those standings in the AFC South and also the team totals for the Colts.
We'll talk about that a little bit. Even the Colts quarterback battle is getting interesting. Last headline here, the coaches preseason poll is available. And at the top, Alabama as expected. We'll go more through that top 25 and a lot.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Line. I want to talk about some of the action we saw yesterday on the Major League Baseball board. And I want to start with the Dodgers-Phillies. It has a big feel to it. The Phillies winning 8 in a row coming into this game. The Dodgers, of course, always viewed as the best team in the sport. And rain possibly getting in the way, Donnie, of what looked like it was going to be an incredible pitcher's duel. Before the rain intervened, Aaron Nola, 4 innings, 1 hit, 7 strikeouts. Max Scherzer, 3 1/3, only 3 hits allowed, 6 strikeouts. The rain checked in, and you said it when we were on In Play Sports tonight. Boy, that would be a massive boost there to the Dodgers' chances if this thing does get turned over to both teams' bullpens.
Yeah, you thought the Phillies' chance at victory last night was a very good performance out of Aaron Nolan, sort of, you know, stymie that Dodgers lineup and say, hey, you know what, Max Scherzer's probably going to hold us down to 0-1 runs. Let's just see if we can hand it over and maybe have a chance with one swing of the bat, put up some runs later in the game and see if you could steal a victory from the Dodgers. But that's the tough part about the Dodgers, and this is why most people, including sports books, Kevin, are not giving up on the Los Angeles Dodgers to win the World Series, to win the NL West, to win the NL overall at this point. And looking at the game last night, as we went off the air, when they were just coming back to the field, the one thing that was apparent, now wait a second, J.D. Hammer's coming in for the Philadelphia Phillies. That means we're going to get, you know, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th at bats here for the Dodgers going up against that Phillies bullpen. They hadn't scored up to that moment. The minute a reliever comes in, home run by Seager there in the 5th inning, and they tacked on with 3 more in the 6th inning and 1 more in the 9th, giving them a total of 5 runs and 12 hits on the night. It's about what was expected. You saw the favorite yesterday being the Los Angeles Dodgers. They were around on the FanDuel Sportsbook, Kevin, at a minus 180, closed around that minus 155 to 150 range. And they were the better team last night overall. Better starting pitching, you would take Max Scherzer. You would take their bullpen and certainly take their lineup. Everything worked out well in the Dodgers' favor. This is the Dodgers ball club, Kevin, that I think we all expect moving forward in August and September.
Yeah, certainly. I just, Nola had his stuff. He did. I heard someone talking about this game. Boy, oh, that's one the Phillies have to get. You know, Max Scherzer gets out of that game. Big disagree. The way Aaron Nola was pitching, you go pitcher for pitcher on that given day. You turn it, you know, look, Matt Moore comes into the game. He lasted, he got one out and gave up three runs. Like, that's Matt Moore. Like, that's what he does, right? So it's an unfortunate result there for the Phillies. But you look through the rest of the end, at least, the Nats looked like they were going to hand a Mets loss. But that game also got stopped because of rain. The Braves, though, did put another win in the appropriate column there, beating the Cincinnati Reds 3-2. Braves are just one game back of the Philadelphia Phillies. Donnie, you've been talking about this team quite a bit here, saying that they are absolutely in the hunt for that NL East crown.
Yep, and I do think they take it as well. Me, you know me, I'm a big-time Philadelphia Phillies fan. I would love nothing more than the Philadelphia Phillies to win the division and play in October baseball. But when I just look at team by team, what can happen, and you can't, look, the Phillies just won 8 straight games. They lost to the Dodgers with Max Scherzer on the mound. So it's not really that big of a, oh my goodness, you didn't see that one coming, did you? I think you're, from the Phillies' perspective is, do you want to win the series against the Dodgers? Absolutely, but at least you don't want to get embarrassed. You know, one of two is fine. You move on, take your lumps, and, you know, hopefully down the back stretch when you're playing some of those lower-level teams, you can pick up those victories back. But also, take a look at the Nationals-Mets game here. Obviously, 3-1 here as they suspended the baseball game, which is interesting on its end because typically in the past, that game would just be a washout and they would start a brand new game or a doubleheader. Now, I do see the game resumes today, Kevin, at 4:10 Eastern, which is it, I guess, a day-night doubleheader that they're going to have in that game, I assume? Or is it the second game, 9 innings? It's early in the morning, so I didn't get the logistics of it as well. But I do see that game is going to resume at 4 o'clock. And maybe it does help the Mets because if it's a 7-inning game, you're down 2 runs. There's not enough time to make it up. If it's a 9-inning game, it looks like it's just saying resume. So I assume 9 innings there, Kevin. But hopefully throughout the day we'll get some more details on exactly what's taking place up there at Citi Field.
Yeah, oh, but then again, there's another game that's at 7. Are they going to play 9 innings? Like, are we?
That's what I mean.
We're back to not being worried about it. Like, it's a very odd situation. We'll probably be skipping past those games when we do our previews in hour number 2. I got to bring up the Red Sox here, Donnie. You know, we yesterday said, hot or not, would this team miss the postseason? They're not only no longer leading the AL East, they're not even the top spot for the AL wild card right now, jumped by the Athletics. And they're only one game up in the loss column of both the Yankees and the Blue Jays. It seems like they're just continually just waiting on Chris Sale to come back. But again, it's once every 5 days. This Boston team's not right.
Yeah, they should have back-to-back wins here. You can't blow a game against Toronto. We have a massive lead, even though it was a road game. And you can't blow this game in the later innings like you had another lead of 4-1 in this one through 5 innings. Now, taking a look, like, what went wrong here, Kevin? It wasn't so far ago where Boston looked like the cream of the crop in the AL East. They would say, hey, you know, worst-case scenario, they'll make an easy wild card, and maybe somebody gets really hot and chases them down the division. It happened quite quickly. They are 5 games back now in the AL East, which is astounding. Mm-hmm. But how do you do that, Kevin? Just look at the last 10 games in the division. The Rays are 8-2, red hot. You are 2-8, meaning the Boston Red Sox. And you know what, right behind them, even though last night you took a loss for the Yankees, still 7-3 in their last 10. And the same thing with the Jays, 7-3 overall in their last 10 as well. That's how leads evaporate when you have good baseball teams around you playing good baseball, and you're not playing good baseball at all. 2-8 over the last 10, that can't happen. And that's why they sit 5 back and now struggling in the playoff race, including the wild card.
Let me also throw something at you here, Donnie. I almost wish this was in hot or not. We always talk about value. The Phillies are minus 115 to win the NL East. They are one game up on Atlanta, 2 up on the New York Mets. Only 20 cents more on Tampa Bay at minus 135. Boston 5 back. Yanks and Blue Jays 7 back. 7.5 if you're Toronto. Is there value on Tampa Bay at minus 135? Are they not getting enough respect with that number?
They're not getting any respect with that number because, again, like you're trying to factor in because you're also looking from a Phillies perspective here, Kevin. It's a 3-team race, so you basically have to beat 2 other teams. When you're looking legitimately, and again, we're about midway through August, sitting here on August 11th, that's a 5-game lead. that is, you know, it's not insurmountable because obviously the Red Sox had a couple game lead and you go 2-8 over your next 10 games, mm-hmm. the Rays will go back. But when you look from a Rays perspective, aren't they just a steady baseball team? Like a losing streak to them feels like 5-5 over the last 10, just getting splits here. You always have good starting pitching, even though you probably couldn't pick them out of a lineup saying, hey, which one of these guys are the five Rays starters that are going to go out there? Look at their bullpen. Just a bunch of guys getting the job done. Looks like the bats are coming around, which is great. But when I look at the Rays, so fundamentally sound, them with a five-game lead feels a lot different at a minus 135 price than the Phillies with a one-game lead here when two teams are breathing right down your neck. It's wild stuff here, but the Rays not getting any respect, Kevin, to your original point.
It's really interesting because just when you consider where that number is, right? And again, if you want to keep comparing, the Astros are two games up on the Oakland Athletics. They're minus 700 when the AL West. We're going to talk darn hot or not about that Oakland number. But Donnie, just talking about the Oakland team, I got to say, you know, obviously following the Yanks closely every night, I also have to check, you know, Toronto and what Oakland just doesn't lose. No matter what, like yesterday was a prime example, letdown spot to Cleveland, game one of the series. They figure it out. They tie it up. They win it in extras. It's their fifth consecutive win.
Yeah, and that's what they do. It's almost like a mirror image, right? You see Oakland, you know, don't get a lot of fans in the stands. And you see Tampa, don't get a lot of fans in the stands. Unheralded, you know, not many superstars on either team. But every single year, that front office puts them in the best possible position with their payroll to compete. And it doesn't surprise us that the A's and Tampa, once again, careening down the stretch here, hoping to both make the playoffs.
And the thing as well for Oakland is somewhat similar maybe to what Atlanta did, Donnie. I think what you've talked about is maybe not just these monster stars, but a number of pieces, right? Starling Marte, we've seen him come through with big hits. We joked last night. It seemed like every single time you looked up, Josh Harrison's just on base,
amazing,
doing something, being a menace for that team. And they find guys to step up. Like Jed Lowry was the one who tied it in the top of the eighth, and he's the one who hit a two-out double in the top of the 10th to be able to score what was the winning run. We'll talk more about that team and hot or not. But next here on the early line, some NFL news and notes, especially looking at the Indianapolis Colts comeback.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are back right here on Sports Grid, and we want to let you know where you can find us on all of our social media platforms. Stay up to date with everything that we've got going on here on Sports Grid by following us on Twitter at Sports Grid, and of course now over at Sports Grid TV. Get all the updates, anything that you might miss here, even though you should be watching wall-to-wall coverage anyway, but anything that you might miss there, again, at Sports Grid and at Sports Grid TV. Donnie, let's talk a little NFL. The Indianapolis Colts. Some good news around the quarterback room. Carson Wentz walking around, moving around. We, you know, talked about it. Like, I don't know, it could be surgery, might rehab. No, we're getting surgery. We're getting surgery 100%. 5 to 12 weeks, do we need a quarterback? No, we don't need a quarterback. We've got this thing figured out. Reading tea leaves, it felt like it was closer to 5 than 12 weeks, Donnie. And, boy, things look good right now for Wentz and the Colts.
No, it does. And I guess you could say the same prognosis there for Quentin Nelson as well, because they had the same surgery. So I figure if the same doctor does it, one looks good, the other one's back. Not to say they're taking full dropbacks here at the quarterback position. And, you know, hey, he's already rolling on rollouts where he hurt his foot primarily just a few weeks ago in training camp. I think these guys will be fine. And the reason I say that is you know, when you take a look overall at the odds, and it's certainly to win the AFC South at this point, or if you take a look at team totals here, if we were heading into the season, which we thought we were, Kevin, just a couple weeks ago, and we had no injury concerns heading into training camp, we're looking at the Colts as a team that could possibly win the division right around that, you know, plus 105, plus 10, 110 number going up against the Tennessee Titans. But now as we take a look at it here, you saw the big shift with the injuries, Kevin. The Tennessee Titans at a minus 135, the Colts now sitting at a plus 170 to win the AFC South. And also at the FanDuel Sportsbook here, the team total for the Colts is at 8.5. I do believe over the next week to week and a half, once you get more information coming back on Wentz, that that number should continue to rise, meaning the team total from 8.5 back up into that 9 range. And also to win the division, Kevin, that plus 175 price will get shorter. You're looking at a very tough start here for the Indianapolis Colts on the season here in the NFL. With Wentz or without Wentz, there's still going to be tough games, but there's no way that you can go into the season and have some of these younger quarterbacks, Sam Ehlinger, you know, Jacob Eason, start two or three games here and think you're still going to be in the capability of winning that AFC South.
The main thing that you just brought up, though, Jacob Eason or Sam Ehlinger, a quarterback battle now between these two. I don't know if that's good because they're looking at all their options. I don't know if that's good because Sam Ehlinger is impressing, or if it's a whole bunch of concern because Jacob Eason wasn't able to hold on to this job for more than a week, Donnie. What's your read on this situation?
My read on this situation is there's absolutely zero panic, Kevin, in the room for the Indianapolis Colts that Carson Wentz is going to be available a lot sooner than later, because when you're reading into what's going to take place here in their first game or first game matchup here in the preseason, it's like, hey, you know, we're going to start Jacob and Sam will come in at some time in this one. But trust me on this, a rookie sixth round pick that you have Super Bowl aspirations is probably not going to make it to the starting gate here in week one. You probably still would have a lean towards Jacob Eason, but even further out, Kevin, I think the surgery went well enough where Wentz is back, and he's probably in the ear of Chris Ballard in the front office. Like, hey, guys, I'm going to be here for week one at this point, and maybe you just had to whisper around the league here from the front office and Ryan Grigson that says, hey, you know what? Why don't we just try to jump into this right here and put this word out here that, hey, if things don't go well, we're probably going to look at Nick Foles. And Carson Wentz goes, you know what? I feel much better than I did yesterday, coach. Make sure Frankie put me in there. I'm going to be ready for game one. So maybe playing that little bit of, like, you know, push and shove out there to try to get Wentz a little bit more motivated. I think he's going to be back with a legitimate chance here for week one, so you don't have to start inexperienced at quarterback against the Seattle Seahawks.
We'll expand on that a little bit, where that line looks. The one thing I'll say, if I were a Colts fan, I'd be happy about, this will sound a little odd, but as someone who followed Wentz closely with Philly, I'd be very happy that Quentin Nelson had the same exact procedure, because I still think Wentz rushed back from the torn ACL, and I think that might have kind of led to the injuries that he dealt with that following season. If Wentz is out there and Quentin Nelson's like, yeah, I'll be back in 2-3 weeks, I'm like, whoa, that's not good. Similarly, also, if Quentin is out there and Wentz isn't, you're like, all right, well, this something's starting to not add up here. So it's at least ideal that they're on that same timeline there. Some other updates, Donnie. How about Rashad Bateman goes down for the Baltimore Ravens? Now, look, a rookie wide receiver talent selected a little bit lower in the draft usually isn't going to chew up massive headlines here, but this team just has nothing in the way of wide receiver talent. So you're taking a look at it. This is not good for a team that already is very weak at this position.
No, you're right. And it seems like, you know, when lightning strikes here from a, you know, player perspective on the Ravens, it seems like it always strikes and they sort of strike out on the rookie wide receivers, or at least coming into camp healthy. Because also, Kevin, it's not to say like, ah, first round bust, can't believe they drafted the guy. He's a very good college football player. But the issue always is when you're taking a look at the Ravens here is how that passing game is actually going to develop at this time. Because when you're trying to factor in what Lamar Jackson does really well, they are a power running football team, and the play action pass really works well because you have to account 8 guys in the box to worry about where the football is going and particularly where Lamar Jackson is going. So when you want a young rookie wide receiver that's expected to break into the league and do some damage, the key thing for the young guy is, again, we don't have very many OTAs to practice. Sure, he's going to be in his playbook in the offseason, but the mental reps and the physical reps that come in training camp to get yourself acclimated with an offense, that is what's needed here throughout the summer. He's not going to get that. And even looking at what they're saying the injury is, I'm going to assume it's probably a hamstring injury. That's probably at least 3 to 4 weeks, which knocks out his entire summer. So we love to believe, Kevin, he's going to have a major impact in September or October when he hasn't had those mental or physical reps out there on the football field that you need as a young kid. It's a shame because, you know, we've seen the Perrymans of the world, you know, even, you know, Hollywood get banged up last year. And now you have Bateman here coming into camp. The one thing you needed was a big-time weapon here to try to be that veteran presence at the wide receiver position for Lamar Jackson. Trying to do it from a young perspective here with players, not working out so well for him. Hopefully the kid gets better quickly, though.
And one of the reasons I think they try to justify not bringing Julio in was, hey, we already spent some high-end draft capital on the wide receiver position. And you need Rashad Bateman to be out there, rookie or not. This is a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. Do not forget, like, this is a team that was laying a number to the Kansas City Chiefs last season. This is a team that was one of the most feared groups in the league. And there's these questions around Lamar about whether or not he can get the job done in the postseason. And so often I feel like we look at the skill positions there. And look, Mark Andrews is a great tight end, but how much of that is Lamar? How much of that is the offense? It's always tough to say. Hollywood Brown has a lot of speed. Same with Sammy Watkins. Are they great, high-end, high-level talents at the wide receiver position? I'm not so sure. And that's one of the things that remains super interesting about a Baltimore team that is favored to win the AFC North. And then that's what's going to make the AFC North so interesting, because you really do have in that division what I would consider three polarizing teams and maybe three polarizing quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and then, of course, Big Ben Roethlisberger there. Baltimore plus 115, Cleveland plus 155. Boy, Donnie, the Steelers have dropped all the way down now to plus 440, the reigning division champions of that North division.
Yeah, and look, there's a lot of pedigree in Pittsburgh. I mean, Mike Tomlin is a very good football coach. I don't think we think that they're actually going to fall off the map being the Steelers, but they don't seem to be that hot commodity anymore that we take a look at. Because when you're looking from a Ravens perspective, they are regular season killers. And up till last year, you know, if we equate it to another sport in the NBA, when you try to take a look at the Milwaukee Bucks, like, hey, man, they roll over everybody in the regular season, but come playoff time when it matters in a half-court set, they can't get the job done. Well, they ended up getting some breaks with injuries and winning a championship. Maybe the Ravens can get that break as well, because when you watch them week to week in the regular season, they're usually more physical than the next team they play. Lamar Jackson is running wild. They're putting up nice numbers in the high 20s and low 30s on offense. Then when you get to the playoffs, when it gets a little bit more condensed and you got to rely on pinpoint passing, the Ravens aren't able to do that. And maybe Big Ben comes back, drops 30 pounds. He looks great. Maybe you have, you know, Najee Harris buoy that offense, young wide receiving core, and that offensive line gels. But I agree, Kevin. 440 is a pretty steep price there, and it's a nice value on the Pittsburgh Steelers. But if I'm looking from that division, it's clear to me, heading into the season in September, they should be the third favorite here out of a four-team division race, and that's where they should be.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. One more injury update here. Here we go again. The Philadelphia Eagles, Andre Dillard. Listen, injury regression is a lie. Whoever told you, if your team is banged up this year, next year it'll work, it never does. Another Eagle we have to hear about. We've already heard about Devonta Smith. The thing is, Donnie, this has kind of now been the deal here with Andre Dillard. A torn bicep last year cost him the entire season. They had grand ideas for this kid to come in, a first-round draft choice out of Washington State to replace Jason Peters. Philadelphia has still not seen that materialize, and another rough, less-than-ideal start for Dillard here in Philly.
No, you're right. And I don't know what to do here for the Philadelphia Eagles. Particularly, it falls on Howie Roseman. You draft a kid out of Washington State, an air raid offense under Mike Lee. So the one thing is, like, can he even run block? Because all they do is pass. But you're figuring in the NFL, hey, that probably translates well. I would rather my left tackle be a dominant pass blocker than dominant run blocker at this point. But you guys can't be dominant anywhere, as they say, Kevin. You can't make the club in the tub each and every year here. It seems like Dillard is injured. And also, like, you know, you get the bicep injury, I understand. You really can't play through that all that well if you're trying to extend your arms and be a pass blocker. That doesn't work in the NFL if one arm doesn't work. So you get that surgery and come back, and now you're banged up with your knee, which basically ends that left tackle experiment this year that's saying, like, hey, it's either going to be Dillard or Jordan Mailata, the young, talented kid. Looks like he's going to win by default, and that's another first-round pick to hang on the mantle here saying, hey, Howie, what are we doing out here? So it's what it is.
It's tough. You know, I saw some rankings from different, you know, football services about the 10 best offensive line groups in the league. The Eagles were left off that list. And it's unbelievable, man. Like, the talent that's on this team. There is talent on this team, but Brandon Brooks didn't play last year. Who knows what Dillard brings to the table? Kelsey gets up there in age. Lane Johnson was banged up. You know what? Maybe that is fair. There's a lot of talent there, but what is talent if they're not available? Nothing. We're coming back. We'll give you some hot or not right here on the early line on a Wednesday morning.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on the early line, time for some hot or not. What I can only expect will be some real lengthy takes there from Don. It helped me out. We're struggling here on a Wednesday morning. It is what it is, though. We'll make it through, I promise you. Let's put a nice, neat little bow, though, on what we were talking about here around Carson Wentz. And I think Donnie tipped his hand a little bit as to what he's expecting. And I think it's good news, though, that we get to ask this question here. Donnie, hot or not, Carson Wentz will start week one versus the Seattle Seahawks.
I'm going yes on this one. So I'm going to go absolutely hot. And the reason being, we've seen some injuries here out of Carson Wentz, you know, maybe coming back a little bit too soon. But that's the sign of, look, hey, I know my job is here to win. I need to lead this football team. It's going to show my team a lot if I can gut this out and be there for them game one. So when the going gets tough through the regular season, when you hit adversity, say, hey, man, Wentz has been with us the whole time. He's really dug in here. And if this guy is really injured and he can't play, we understand that. Because we also saw when he was a rookie back with the Philadelphia Eagles, if you remember during the preseason where Sam Bradford got traded away, he cracked a couple ribs there and still showed up week one to start against the Cleveland Browns and had a very good day. It's very important to get that first impression out there that says, hey, guys, you know, I might be injury prone at this point, but if I can walk, I'm going to be out on the football field. We also saw it a little bit later in his career in 2017 versus the Los Angeles Rams in L.A., throwing a touchdown pass on a torn ACL to Alshon Jeffrey. I think he is going to be there week one, and it's a great sign. Whenever they that doctor 5 to 12 weeks here, you got a little bit scared. You saw some of those lines move that we just talked about here, Kevin, going over and saying, can they actually win the AFC South? Can they actually hit their win total now of 8.5? I think you might get a value bargain here, because if you're looking at those first two games in the regular season, Seattle and the Rams, they are both at home, Kevin. If they have any aspirations at getting to the playoffs, winning their division, hitting their team total, what do they need to do? At least get a split out there. So I'm going to go hot on this, that Carson Wentz will start for the Indianapolis Colts week one.
You know, I agree. And that's incredible to think. But real again, everything, every decision that they have made points us in that direction. And I think if I would have pushed this back down and said, like, he's starting by week three, I think it would have been a really easy hot. And that, it's because you want him out there for the Seattle Ram games. Those are at home. You'd love a split. Even with Wentz, a split would probably be noteworthy. But him being back at least by at Tennessee, I think is crucial. And at this point, yeah, you expect him to be back. I'll tell you this, though, Donnie. That's a tough start to the season. I mean, home versus Seattle, home versus L.A., at Tennessee, at Miami, at Baltimore. Oh, a lot of teams expected to make the postseason. I mean, those are not easy trips. You've got a primetime game in that one against the Baltimore Ravens. Like, if he is on the long end of that stretch there and he misses the first five games, you've made this point a number of times, but it's worth reiterating. Season done. You get a win without Carson Wentz in those first five, I think it'd be a miracle.
Yes. I completely agree with you that in that aspect. And also, you know, we always like to educate the people that are listening or watching here as well. There's a lot of value still to be had on the Colts if, let's just say they go, you know, Carson Wentz, hey, look, he had a little bit of a setback here. He's not going to be back till week four or week five. If there's some semblance of them going, you know, 1-5 or 1-4 to open the season, and then you're saying, okay, they're healthy and ready to go, you're going to look at those live in-season team totals as well as maybe a extreme long shot to win that division. Because to me, when the Colts are right, they're a very good football team. And even being completely healthy at this point here, as we're taking a look, Kevin, and saying, like, how are we going to do over the first 5 weeks? 2-3 with Carson Wentz and a, you know, healthy offensive line with Quentin Nelson, that's certainly doable to try to rebound from, but you just can't have that disaster start 1-4 or 0-5 here.
What you'll notice on the FanDuel Sportsbook, there are no Colts alternate win totals. I'd be interested on both sides of the spectrum. You're under 6.5, you're over 10.5 kind of numbers with that team as we get more and more Wentz information. It won't probably be until then, until we will actually get those numbers. I want to go to the college football side, and we'll expand on the coaches' preseason polls top 25 to start hour number two. But I want to put a little spin on this here. When you look outside of the top 15, 16 is Miami. So, Donnie, hot or not, Miami has the best chance to make the college football playoff out of those teams that are outside of the top 15.
You know, it's interesting you bring this up. I'm actually going to go not, and I am a big-time Miami Hurricanes fan. I think they have a very good football team coming in, but I'm trying to play it out to see how it's actually going to go forward. I don't think they're going to beat Alabama on opening day, which is a loss right out of the gate. Can they rip off and run right through that schedule and, you know, end up with a great record by the end of the regular season? Yes, they can, Kevin. But here's the issue that we have. If you're a one-loss football team and you play in a major conference like the ACC, you're probably going to make it in to the college football playoff. But here's the issue. You're probably going to have to meet up with Clemson, Kevin, in the ACC championship game. So even though you would have lost Alabama to start the season, had a great regular season if you rip off all those wins, but then you're going to have to face Clemson once again. And the last thing the voters see is you got beat by Clemson. That is your second loss. It's not as if, Kevin, if they didn't have to play Clemson in the championship game, and let's just say they played Alabama game one, Clemson game two, two hard-fought losses between both of those games, then ripped off, you know, 10 straight wins. Hey, look at the momentum. Miami's one of the better teams in the country. But if you start out with a loss, you're going to work your way back into it, and then you hit it with another loss in the ACC championship game, which I'm probably sure they're going to be a decided underdog versus the Clemson Tigers if Clemson does make it there. But sliding it down, one of the teams to make it in, Kevin, how about just go west? Washington, sitting at 100-1 to win the college football playoff. If you can navigate the waters out west there in that Pac-12 and you only have one loss, you know, college football is about money. They're going to scream and yell, you better have us in here. This team won our conference. They only have one loss or less. How can you put a Miami team in here with two losses in the ACC? I think maybe Washington is a team. Not to say they deserve it or they should be a top four football team, but just the way it breaks out after that top 15 for me, Kevin.
It's a great point. You always want to go through that schedule, and the Pac-12 teams will always be interesting because, again, no matter what the recent history says, this is Power 5, not Power 4. And if Washington is able to beat up on the Pac-12, this gets interesting. 100-1. You could certainly talk me into that. I just want to reiterate this point on Miami and why it's a not for me as well, Donnie. We have never had a two-loss team in the college football playoff. Never. That means they have to beat one of Bama or Clemson. That's just such a difficult ask. Could they do it? Could De'Eric King go out there and have a super special season? They could. But by the way, they also then, if they say beat one of Bama or Clemson, I got to be perfect throughout. They've never had a two-loss team in the college football playoff. I'll tell you, I'll throw out there as well a couple of teams on it that I do think are interesting. We've mentioned Oklahoma State quite a bit. I think the fact that they host the Sooners this year at Bedlam, even though they could never beat them, at least is a little bit of a boost. You're not dealing with divisions in the Big 12, so all you have to do is get to the Big 12 championship game. And also, look, we've not started Big 10 previews yet, but I think Iowa is interesting, Donnie. Like, realistically, they have Iowa State's number. If they win at Wisconsin, they're an Ohio State Big Ten Conference Championship game away from being able to crash the party. At the end of the day, it's very likely going to be super difficult for teams outside of the top 15 to make their way into the party, but those are potentially where some of the value is. Speaking of value, Donnie, hot or not, there is value on the Oakland Athletics to win the AL West at plus 460, sat two games back right now of the Houston Astros.
You have to be. And it's interesting because we brought it up a little bit earlier when you're trying to take a look at numbers here. Hey, there's teams that have a five-game lead that have a minus 135 price tag to actually take down the division. And the Tampa Bay Rays have been there, done that before, and are a good baseball team. So you flip it over to Oakland, who has the acumen to be a very good baseball club, even though they operate with the constraints of a no salary cap Major League Baseball team. They basically have, or excuse, baseball league, they basically have a salary cap on their team from an owner and management protection. Minus 700 for the Astros. And again, this is coming from me, Kevin. I think the Astros do win the AL overall. But that's not the question of the show with a hot or not here. Do you think Houston is a good baseball team? Yes, I do. The question is, does the price fit the mold here of only two games? Injuries happen in baseball. We're still in COVID here. What happens if you have a breakout there again where, you know, it's Bregman who's been out for you know, doesn't come back soon enough. And then you have Jose Altuve or Carlos Correa, you know, close contacts where you got to sit out a week. We don't know who's vaccinated, who's not vaccinated. But if you do catch it, it seems like you're probably going to be a mandatory 10-day quarantine. And that's if you continue to test negative here to get back on the baseball field. Only two games back with a month and a half to go, a plus 460 price tag. Not to say the Athletics can win the division, but if you're looking only two games back, that is an absolutely sensational price on the Oakland Athletics down the stretch here. We know early in the season, Kevin, who lumped up who, right? Houston Astros lumping up Oakland to start. Hey, Oakland's not going to be able to get out of this. Oakland's playing good baseball and right in the rearview mirror of the Astros. Absolutely hot. There's value on that 460 number.
It's not even a question. It's a two-team race. You have plus 460 in your pot. You don't have to cash that ticket. You just need them to jump in front of Houston and correct that price. Like, we've talked a lot about the Dodgers being minus 165, right, while being four games back. Listen, okay, pedigree, all that, and something the Giants don't have. The A's are a perennial postseason contender who got better at the deadline and are two games back, nipping at the Astros' heels. Minus 700 on Houston? And this is, as Donnie said it too, like, no matter, even if I don't like the Astros, I've given them their flowers. I bet on the Astros team win totals seemingly whenever I need to be bailed out because they hit every single night. Minus 700 is a ridiculous price, especially when it's not the Mariners behind them. It's not the Rangers, right? Like, again, that's just an unbelievable number. Certainly something to consider here. Last one for us on hot or not. Donnie, if you don't mind, I'd like to bat leadoff on this one. Ben Simmons, can he play alongside Draymond Green? Is this hot or is this a not? And I am here to tell people that this is absolutely piping hot. We could potentially be on the heels of an all-time overthink from the Golden State Warriors front office. I hope for the Warriors' sake, if you're a Warriors fan, if you're a Warriors backer, you better hope that Steph, Clay, and specifically Draymond here in this instance say, hey, what are you doing? Get Ben Simmons. Here is the projected starting lineup for this basketball team. No Ben Simmons. Steph, Clay, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, James Wiseman. Who do you think Ben Simmons is stepping in for? James Wiseman. Oh, knockdown shooter James Wiseman. No! Ben and Draymond will play the four and the five, and it works beautifully. The passing out of this planet. What are you worried about? Defense by bringing over the guy that finished second in Defensive Player of the Year, unquestionably a top five defensive player in this sport. We're worried about spacing with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on the basketball court. What are we doing here? Quite honestly, Donnie, if they have a deal that they can execute, but they say no because they're worried about spacing, fire everybody in the front office because they've all lost the plot.
And I think you're going somewhere with this, because sometimes when we take a look at what Ben Simmons is and what he isn't, he's a very good defender. Can you imagine late in a basketball game, you're not going to lean on Ben Simmons, obviously, to get to the free throw line and win it for you or make that three-point shot. But imagine Klay Thompson, 2019 second team all-defensive. Draymond Green, one of the best defensive players we've seen over the last decade, and then couple him with Ben Simmons. You have three lockdown defenders on the court at the same time. Now, do you want Draymond and Ben playing side-by-side for 35 minutes a game? No, but you can space those times out. But you are correct. Ben Simmons is a creator. Drive to the rack, kick it out for three-point range. What better shots there to get from Steph and also Klay, a wide-open look from three-point range? It could work, and it does make them better.
Also, it's called staggering minutes. Draymond's not going to play 40 minutes a night. Think, please. Or don't, actually. I'd rather them not get Ben Simmons, actually. Hero of the Night is next.
Your wife called.
She wants her husband back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, we're back right here on the early line. We're moving, we're grooving, we're feeling good. It's time to give out a hero of the night. NBA Summer League game winners? Yes, sir. Sharif Cooper, 84-83 final at the buzzer, knocks down the three to give the Atlanta Hawks the win over the Pacers. A slight money line dog there as the 48th overall selection. I am sure Donnie is already having some GMs looking around at the scouting department saying, hey, what? What a moment for Cooper. What a great pick for the Atlanta Hawks.
21-9 last night, and the sign of a hero of the night is lifting your team to victory and also at an underdog price here, knocking down a shot to win the game for the Atlanta Hawks over the Pacers, and maybe it springs them forward. That's a good young nucleus down there for the Atlanta Hawks in a packed Eastern Conference. But hero of the night, Kevin, you got to be able to put some money in people's pockets. So if you bet the Atlanta Hawks last night at that plus money price and you got that late winner, congratulations to you. Sharif Cooper, 21-9, hero of the night.
This is also just an opportunity for me to let you know that all these NBA GMs sometimes have no idea what they're doing. Like, I'm on an NBA draft night show. It's 4 hours, basically, of me going, he's going to come off the board now, right? They're gonna take him now, right? Like, this is the team, the Knicks, the Bulls. Like, this is the... No, he goes 48th overall. He's a top 20 player in this class at minimum. Here's the reality. Since 1992, there's only been 7 players to average 20 points per game and 8 assists per game at the freshman level. Cooper is one of the 7. There's only been 3 to do it as a sophomore or younger. Sharif Cooper, Ja Morant, Trae Young. Every single one of these GMs right now needs to be looking at, hey, You're fired. I'm firing GMs this morning. I'm firing scouting departments. None of them seem to know what's going on. Hire old KW. Donnie will help you out as well here. And he'll give you some soccer breakdowns if you need it to. He's a soccer guy. Look, we're coming back. It's hour number 2 of the early morning.